to you by the Electoral Commission.
Coming up on the Sports Weekender, we speak rugby with former All Black AJ Whetton. We speak Farah Palmer Cup with Stephen Harris. We speak NRL and all things rugby league with Joey Green. The week that was and the weekend ahead, that's with Broden Nucky from One News. And then we speak football with Seamus Martin. We get a South African view on this big test match tonight in the Greatest Rivalries Tour with John O'Connor. And our panel is Lee Piper and Miles Davis. So listen in, grab yourself a cuppa, listen in to the mid-morning voice of sports in the 09, the Sports Weekender. Welcome in to the Sports Weekender, and I have to say, it was a bit wet out there this morning, but I must admit, it looks like it's going to be a fantastic day. Just before we go any further, a big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street, west in the Auckland CBD. Opposite the iconic Civic Theatre, they have a selection of local, craft and international draft beers on tap. They have a selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food. Music Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09377 3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, I have to say, we get ready for a big weekend of sports, and here to join us, as we always do, back from making the Republic of South Africa a better place for his presence being there for the past week, AJ Whetton, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Biggie. Good to see you. Yeah, good to be back from South Africa.
How was it, mate?
Great time.
Hey, I've got a bit of a bone to pick. Now, what did he bring me back?
I brought you back myself. I think that's enough for anyone, is to come home. Maybe a few other gifts for the family, but good trip. Loved it. I'll tell you what, I didn't miss this weather. 26 degrees through every day, beautiful, a few rounds of golf, some great company, great Kiwis, met some good Kiwis over there, and to touch it all off with a win at Alice Park, couldn't have planned it any better, mate, but nice to be home.
Yeah, it certainly was, and what a fantastic performance it was last week. You know, we look at it, you know, we were under pressure, but we just withstood that pressure. I have to say, Geordie Barrett had some crucial parts in the match. Basically, that try-saver or two on Malcolm Marks. And, of course, Fabian Holland, the big guy, he got his first try. That's only his second try in his first-class career, AJ. And he was paid fantastic odds by mate Mr. Piper. Said, don't bother putting money. He's only scored one try at him. And then, of course, he scores that. But he was immense. It was just a clinical performance. So as we look forward to this tomorrow morning, 3:10 in Cape Town. There has been a couple of enforced changes. Obviously in the forward pack, George Bauer comes in for Ethan de Groot. Simon Parker, who didn't have a bad match, he comes on the blind. They move Tupu Vai to lock. Carter comes in for Morby. Dave Rennie said he's better on defence, so that's calling Big Pat Tui Piloto. He comes onto the bench. He's had some strong performances as a midweek captain. I have to say, I think Dave Rennie, he really has. He would have had a few decisions he would have thought about, because some of those midweek All Blacks have really put in their hands up. And I'm saying Ethan Blackadder, Rico Ioniu, I think his plan is back to the old Rico. And, you know, there's so many guys wanting to put their hands up to be in this test team. South Africa made some changes. Reinick and Pollard become your halfback first five. Ethan Hooker on the wing. And Sia Khaleesi is back. So, yeah, your thoughts, AJ?
Well, first of all, at the test match, it was great to be back at Ellis Park. I mean, I haven't played there since 86, been there a few times, brought back a few memories, but great crowd, great atmosphere, and to sit in the crowd, you can't get any better. It was nice. They went a bit quiet after 55 minutes onwards, but I thought we were in trouble. I had no doubt about that with that scrum. I think they were waiting for it. It took 10 minutes, Peggy, for the first scrum to see where we were, and we had some issues. And if that continued, I think we would have been in trouble. But it's just a new side under Dave Rennie. They held their composure. I think obviously losing a couple of Taylor and De Groot, I think Bauer came on and played immense. It just settled the scrum. And I think the lack of game time with the Springboks combinations, I thought that would be an issue. I said so, actually, with my bunch of lads before the match, and that proved to be. I think they looked disjointed. They looked as though they hadn't played together for a while, and I think that's the advantage of a touring team. You get to play, get the knocks and bumps, have your combinations, and I think that's what is our strength in the last 25 minutes, and they just grew with that and came away with a dramatic win and set them up for a nice big one today. You mentioned Kelisi back for South Africa. That'll be immense. I think Stephen Dutoit, he's a good player, but not a captain. They'll take that pressure off him. Playing his 100th test.
Yes.
That's going to be immense. But the All Blacks now got the confidence. I haven't messed too much with the team. Parker, I thought, played well when he did come on and has earned the right. You need big boys against the South Africans. Let's hope he carries that form into this test. And also Bauer secures his place in that front row. So, look, I think it all matches up. Andre Pollard back. I just think they need some old hands, some steadiness at that first five. Reinach's back. He's been around. So I think on paper they look a bit more balanced when it comes to this test match. And, of course, a must win. And you can imagine what's going to happen. There'll be steam rolling out of that tunnel. Maybe not quite focused, get a bit too excited. Need to calm down because this is the series on the line for them. If they lose it, it's all over. So watch out, All Blacks, watch out, Cape Town, but I've got faith in the boys. They've done it once, and I'm sure they can do it two in a row.
You know what? I was talking to our old mate Stephen Harris, Talkie Steve, as you call him. I didn't call him that. But he asked me my feelings, and I just said to him that it feels 50-50, but I feel more confident our way. And this is a different experience than we had last year. I think Dave Rennie is really stamping his mark on this All Blacks team.
Well, I think they've just, under 50-odd minutes, we were a bit quiet, us Kiwis. I had some golfing mates over there, and we're all quiet. And you can imagine the South Africans, because the scrums, they love the set pieces. But theirs weren't going too good either in the line-out, and nor ours for a while. But I think we just absorbed that pressure, a bit of belief. Fabian Holland's try, I mean, let's not derail that. That was absolutely magic, but significant. It just turned the tide. They're under pressure. We got that charge down. Just gave us the nudge ahead, and I think we just grew in confidence from there. And I thought he was one of the men of the match. I thought he had an outstanding match. And they've just got to take that into the second test. They know what's going to come at them. It's going to be brutal. It'll be intense, the mental side as well as the physical. And if they can just stick together, and that's what you've got to do when you're in Africa, believe in your processes, your patterns and your combinations, and they're going to have to withstand some pressure. There's no doubt about it. But are they in the fight with 10, 15 to go? I think they're good enough to get it over the line. And Dave Rennie has certainly instilled that confidence, belief that they're as good or better than the South African.
Absolutely. And just to continue on the international rugby theme, and if you're getting up to watch the match and after that's finished, you've got another hour before there's more rugby, it's Argentina versus Australia. Les Kiss is doing a rotation type policy. He's not playing Harry Wilson, which I think's a huge mistake, because Harry Wilson, he starts, he's the first name on your team list if you're Les Kiss's coach.
Yeah, I think he just wants to give him a bit of a break. I mean, you're playing in San Salvador there in Argentina. They had a big win against Japan. Are they looking just to scratch a one-all out of this? That wouldn't surprise me. I see Argentina's got an unchanged side after their heroic loss, you should say, to the South Africans a couple of weeks ago. So they'll be pretty happy and excited to play in this, you know, vocal crowd. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with Argentina at home. I just think that they're going to be up for this after their last performance and, say, a few changes and major ones to Australia. I just think Argentina will nip at this one, just get it over the line.
Absolutely. So we move on to our MPC, and of course, wow, a couple of games in midweek. Hawke's Bay 36, Southland 21. Fakatava was just outstanding, but Frank Lahore, the Hawke's Bay captain, a double there. When you got to go, when you have a name like Lahore, you've got you've definitely got some pedigree there, haven't you, AJ? And of course, last night. Now I'm going to be brutally honest. You might tell me off, but Bay of Plenty 22, Auckland 19. Auckland really need to get their A into G, because if they miss playoffs again, there will need to be some serious conversations had. And Jared Beer, I know I've already mentioned that we will be, as we did last year, we'll be talking at the end of the season, and I'm hoping I'm talking positive.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we started really well. I mean, I was out there last night, of course, and, you know, not a miserable bit of a night there, but once again, a bit slow out of the blocks. They got their composure together. Look, they are a young side, and they've had some injuries. Okay, no excuses, but just pointing out they lost 3 or 4 against North Harbour. And to tell you, when I'm in South Africa there, I'm playing golf, but I'm in the changing shed there. I've got TVs there, and here, what do I see? North Harbour playing Auckland live in Africa. That shows you how much they value the rugby, New Zealand rugby. But anyway, and that was a tough one to watch anyway. But
did he get a call from Ron Williams on that?
No, I got a text, but last night they got the fight's there. They have improved, but they are just not closing out matches. And this little couple of mistakes every match, 2 or 3, where it's vital, they turn over a missed pass or a missed opportunity, and it just turns the tie. 22-19, that was a tough one to swallow. Deserved more, but they are not closing out these matches, and they are vital in this NPC, which is a tremendous competition. It is full of upsets all over the place. Anyone can win on game day. And but Auckland, they need to get on a roll. They need to get some confidence, and with confidence, it comes with a win, and they desperately need it. So once again, they'll go back to the drawing board and Taranaki next week, and it's a must win. You're 5 points behind the 8th place. It's Canterbury at this stage, and their season really hinges on next week. So they've got to get their S together, believe in it, and take their opportunities, and just sew up a bit of that defence. And once you start winning, it's contagious. But, sadly, they just can't get that win column going.
Anyway, we head to the weekend's games in the MPC. We start off Taranaki versus Canterbury. The next game is Otago versus Waikato, and of course, Slim Mackay's team, Manawatu, take on North Harbour. That first one, Taranaki, they're just not the same side they were a few years ago. I think Canterbury take this one.
Oh, yeah, they'll be hurting, but they've made 8 changes, so let's see if those combinations work. But Taranaki at home, Crowley at number 9, he's going to really have to control Lakota. And with Boshier there, I mean, he's just a workhorse. They've had an up-and-down season. So, yeah, pretty tight this one. Yeah, Canterbury away. Look, I'm going to stick with Taranaki. I think, Canterbury, a lot of changes. The Shield's gone. Now they're going to front up.
Anyway, we move on. Otago versus Waikato. This one's a close one.
Yeah, always is. Both teams going reasonably well. Just a few changes either side. 5 to Waikato. Otago at home, though, they're a bit of a different beast. They've got some consistency now, and I just like their lineup in the back there with Nemec Rael and Ricky, who's playing some good rugby. Miller controls it well. So, yeah, I just think Otago there, they'll be there by 10 points.
Manawatu versus North Harbour. North Harbour are playing good rugby at the moment, AJ. You have to give it to them.
Oh, yeah, that hurts, but I must admit, yeah, got to give credit where it's due. Manawatu at home haven't been too good. I mean, Vajouan always got a lot of pressure there. Needs to really get these boys going, get the big forwards going, because they're going to be under a bit of pressure. North Harbour, very confident at the moment. Got a couple of good old hands there too, and I like this Mira White, number 9. And, of course, Reeves, who's been a bit of a standout, slots back in at number 8, totally deserves his position. And I just think they're just playing some exciting footy. So, North Harbour to win.
Then we go Sunday. Well, it's bottom of the table clash, Wellington versus Counties Manukau. I think it's at Henry Stadium, so we might get about a dozen there to watch that game. You know, all these great Wellingtonians, you know, you can't beat Wellington on a good day. They're that pathetic. If there was 8 days out of 7, they'll get beaten. I'm going to let Miles Davis know that as well, too. Fortunately, he's on the phone or I'm in the studio, so he can't get hold of me.
There's a few Wellingtonians here. They know where you live. You better watch out. But look, it has been disappointing. They've had it from last year. They've really struggled. And obviously, a few people playing out of position. I'm not quite sure what's happening there. And playing as though they're not working in combinations. And it certainly looks like that on the field. So, Counties, well, who knows? As I said, bottom two. I'll probably stick to Wellington at home there to get over the line.
But yeah, well, I actually picked Wellington too after giving him heaps. Anyway, we move on, and the big game of the weekend. This is the big game, the Shield Challenge. First time since 1979, the Ramphilly Shield is in Whangarei, and it is sold out. And you know what? My heart really wants Northland to defend this. Tasman are a bloody good team. They've had a tough week. They've been right round the region, and the Northland region is a huge region to get round. So, to me, I'm really hoping for a Northland win.
I think we all are. I mean, it's great. I mean, and they played so well against Canterbury and really put them to the sword. So, with that comes the added pressure of the Shield, the massive crowd. Hope they've been focused, yes, enjoyed themselves, take it around, but really they've got a role now is to keep it in the north, in Whangarei. So if they play like anywhere they did against Canterbury, I think they'll have it over Tasman. The excitement will be there. It'll be a fantastic experience for them. I mean, I'm thinking Knock and Rahana are the key to it again. If they just keep playing with that combination, running the cutter superbly. I like the combinations in the forward again, sticking with it. I like Rush at number 6, brings that physicality. This boy Hooper from Aussie, he's all over the place. I like Renata, that experience in the front row. Mullen and Hooker just believe in themselves. They've got some great backs outside to use that ball wisely. But you did mention Tasman. Havili brothers there, very, very experienced, and they've got some pace out wide with Kudawave. So, look, it's the markings of a good old tough rugby match up north. Our hearts are all with Northland, but like anything, you've got to go out and win it. Don't defend it. Speaking from experience, go out and win it and play like you did against Canterbury, and I'm sure that they'll come out on top if they do that. So good luck to them, and good luck to everybody up north. Great opportunity for them.
Absolutely, AJ. Well, welcome back, me old mate. Obviously, what's today's plan?
Well, I'm going to sit down and watch some rugby. The weather's not too good. I go out and walk the dog. It was a bit sad leaving Africa with some of them good buggers I was playing with up there, and the hospitality was superb. A marvellous place to visit, but always nice to come home. There was a great send-off for me at the airport. About one person cheered me on. That was about it.
Yeah, she just said, don't come back either.
No, I think it was the police.
Nikki didn't even drop you off to the airport. She said, get your own way out there, you bum.
No, but I'll tell you, it's a great place. But look, I've got some issues still here, but it's all about the rugby. And great to see. I caught up with Andy Patrick over there, my favourite.
Oh, Patrick, yeah.
And he's still a legend over there. They still revere their All Blacks and New Zealanders in general, Piggy. They just love Kiwis.
Did they know who you were?
Actually, a couple of people did.
Not like that incident in Sydney where somebody thought you were Peter Fitzsimons.
No, that was on a bad day. I don't think that person had it all together. But the respect they have for Kiwis in general, any New Zealanders, they just love seeing you there. They know we're rugby people, and we just get on so well. So the generosity was overwhelming. So, yeah, it's just a lovely place to visit. But I tell you what, it's always nice to come home, mate.
It certainly is, and we'll catch up next week, AJ. You have a wonderful weekend, mate. Cheers. Thanks. That was AJ Whetton, and it's good to have him back. He basically had a... It's good to hear his voice on the radio. So, yeah. Anyway, bit of music, and then we'll talk some Farrah Palmer Cup with Stephen Harris.
Give to me, it makes me feel fine. Every little word that you say to me keeps my heart on time. Red blood flowing like a rough rapid when you are nearby. Ain't no doubt, cause it's plain to see. You set us so fire. Something so true is what I get from you.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. A quick turnaround. Hopefully Spotify, you don't bump me this week, and my good friends at Spotify. Anyway, before we go any further, this segment is brought to you by Force Electrical. A bit about Force Electrical. They were started in 2014 by my old mate, Nick Brakovich, and have grown into a trusted name across the wider region. And this is why you should choose them. First, choose them to do your electrical work. They're reliable. They have knowledge that sets them apart. They stay ahead of the latest industry standards and technology. And what they do, well, what can't they do? They can do anything from residential to commercial projects, ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel systems with inverters and battery storage, and ELV solutions. So for all your electrical business, whether it be at home, whether it be in the office, the factory, or wherever, give Nick a call. His number is 021-628-341, or you can email him nick@forceelectrical.co.nz. So we move on to our Premier Women's Competition starts this weekend, the Farrah Palmer Cup. Here to talk to us, a renowned rugby commentator, Stephen Harris. How are you?
Very good, thank you, Amon. Good morning to you and good morning to your listeners. And once again, always a privilege and a pleasure to be on your show. Never a chore.
If you ever forget saying that, I will pull you up on this, mate.
Yeah, there we go, mate. That's the trademark, yes.
Because sort of like a bloke who put himself down as the mid-morning voice of sports of the 09. I don't know who that bloke was, but yeah.
No, I don't know.
Anyway, let's have a look at this competition. Obviously, it starts. Obviously, some of the bigger teams, they do provinces, are depleted like they were last year with the Rugby World Cup, with the Black Ferns program, but really is still one of the most fantastic, it's one of the most evenly fantastic competitions in New Zealand, and I think it's going to get better, obviously coming off a very good Super Rugby picky season. What's your views on this competition?
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of an unknown factor, especially with so many of our top players away or out with the Black Ferns. At the minute, you know, you think back to last year's competition, 2025, just in terms of a recap, of course, why Cuts will go through as the current champions at the moment. They had a very good final last year against Canterbury, and of course in the championship division, Otago, who got who basically won that particular premiership, but there were no changes, so they didn't go up, which was a little bit weird, to say the least.
Oh yeah, it certainly was.
Which was a little weird. You know, you win that final, and you don't get promoted. I suppose if you're looking at maybe the teams to beat, I think you'd probably say Waikato or Canterbury. And boy, if you wanted a little bit of a roughie, perhaps Manawatu Cyclones. I do believe Auckland have a lot of new girls in their team, as well as Waikato. So they're probably your main favourites. You look down to that championship division Yeah, probably Otago will be there or thereabouts, possibly Hawke's Bay Tui. I'll be intrigued to see how Wellington goes this year, but boy, talk about falling from grace. They used to be one of the top premiership teams and just fallen away. I'm not too sure what's happening in Wellington at the moment. Seems to be a bit of an issue, both with not just their women's team, but their men's team as well.
Well, as I just said to AJ, you might have heard me said, if there was 8 days out of seven, the Wellington Lions would get beaten at the moment. But I've got to be careful because I won't be. I have no doubt this will come back to haunt me at some stage. Anyway, let's have a look at the weekend ahead. Let's get to the championship this Saturday. Obviously, Hawke's Bay Tui versus the North Harbour Hibiscus, and our old mate Mona Lisa Coughlin. She's very involved over on the North Harbour, but this one here, I think I'm probably going to go for North Harbour on this.
And okay, this is being played down at the Hawke's Bay Regional Sports Park in Hastings, and that's a really, really good venue. Of course, part of the Twin Cities down there in the Hawke's Bay. So yeah, hard to know what the weather's like. It's not. We're getting a bit of hit by a bit of a weather bomb over the country. Listen, Hawke's Bay Tui have always had a really good pack, and I think I would have to go for the home side on this particular one. I actually saw North Harbour at the Hibiscus playing a preseason game against Northland. They struggled a little bit up front, but they are definitely an improved side on 2025.
Okay, we move on. Tasman versus the Northland Cowrie. Well, and you're not being one eyed. You're just stating facts. I think the Cowrie would just be too good for them.
Yeah, that's a pretty useful Cowrie pack. I know they do go into this match as warm favourites. Tasman has kind of struggled in the championship in recent times. First of a double header against Tasman as well over the weekend in both the women's and the men's. But yeah, I think I'll go for the visitors on this occasion.
And then we go to the Otago Spirit versus the Wellington Pride and the championship. And this one is dead even. There's not too much separating these two sides.
No, not a lot at all. Otago Spirit, very, very, very good team last year. There might be a little bit of a disruption with a couple of girls out of the team at the moment. Man, good thing about it is under the roof. I think on this occasion though, I'll go for the home side, Otago.
Absolutely. So we go to the Premiership, and I can tell you something right now. This is interesting. So we kick it off, Counties Manukau Heat versus Waikato.
That's going to be a tough old slog in these conditions down at Navigation Homes in Pukekohe. Of course, kickoff for this game is five past two. You know, given that Waikato are the back-to-back champions, and you know they still have a. You know, they still have a couple of experienced heads in their team as well. Of course, you know, you look at you also look at this county's Manukau team. They're pretty useful as well. I see that Grace Hopapa Barrett will be basically turning out for Waikato, and she's very, very experienced and. I think she'll do a lot to pull these youngsters through. I think they might be too strong for the home side.
And then, of course, we have the Manawatu Cyclones versus the Bay of Plenty Volcanics. And I have to say Manawatu looked quite good this year, as they did last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, good to see Karis Dillinger after playing for Australia, or originally going over and playing for the Queensland Reds, and then cracking the Australian side. Didn't realise she actually had an Australian father, hence she ended up representing Australia, although she's not playing today, but they seem to have reasonable depth in this particular Cyclones team, and I think they might be too strong, and we'll look out for Wikitoria Villun. That's the wife of Geordie Villun, the Turbo's halfback. She's a very good player out on the wing. There's not much to her, but boy, she's got a lot of pace and power. I think the home side too good.
Absolutely. And then on Sunday, to finish off the round, and, you know, like Canterbury versus the Auckland Storm, and it doesn't matter, men's, women's, Canterbury, it's Canterbury versus Auckland. There's that rivalry, there's that tradition, and Canterbury and Auckland, when in the women's game, both have a really good traditional rivalry now.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good bit of experience and youth in this Auckland team. Of course, the very exciting Taupo Basin playing on in the number seven jersey. Formerly out of the Cyclones goes well, but once again, they've also got experience as well with Eloise Blackwell, who just, what? I think she's been like playing forever. But just every time I see her playing, she's got a massive smile on her face and is just going really well. You look through that Canterbury team, man, doesn't get any better than Lucy Jenkins, who usually plays on the side of scrum. She'll slot into number eight. Boy, it's still a pretty useful Canterbury team, and I always like the way that the girl Palamo at fullback plays for Canterbury. Another experienced player, Lokatui, the number six. So, you know, there's a few names that have been part of this Canterbury team for a while. Whilst you could pick an upset here, I think I'll go to Canterbury on this occasion.
Yeah, I think I'd be leaning towards that way. Anyway, big match tomorrow for you, Stephen. Those who probably, those that are probably listening for this on, Stephen is from Northland. He's a proud Tony Far supporter. How are you feeling, mate? How's the temperature? Nervous?
Yeah, I am a little bit because, you know, there's been a lot happening up north. I think they've just about taken the shield to every nook and cranny in that northern region. There are people in the middle of nowhere with pictures of the Ranfurly Shield. So, you know, some things like can be a little bit of a disruption. But
yeah.
I know talking to, or basically from what I've heard of Ryan Martin, the head coach, he's basically told the players to embrace it as opposed to what's that saying? To walk towards the pressure. Mm. And man, you know, from what I'm hearing, 16,000-17,000, a bit of a sellout at Seminole Stadium. I'm heating up myself.
Oh, good one.
They've certainly got the pack. I don't know if there's probably a better pack running around in the NPC at the moment. All of this is going to be about the mental space and getting that right. I'm saying that this is a very, very good Tasman team. You know, you've got the youngster Odin Ryan and the other young fella from New Zealand 20s, the boy Lee at number eight. And then you've got the two Harvelli brothers, and boy, probably one of the most better outside backs running around in the competition, Tomoe Salau. So,
yes.
Boy, you never take it for granted. Even Kunawave, the other wing. So you could see where this and Roberts at centre is such a good offloader as well. I think Harvelli will identify. Both Harvellis they know where the strengths are. If you watch this Tasman team play, watched them play Southland last week, and boy, they weren't shy to put the cross kicks in. They know where their strengths are in terms of getting the ball in the hands of those outside backs. So all the pressure's on the home side, but hey, regardless of how it happens, just want to wish everybody to have a fantastic day tomorrow. And if they can hang on to the shield, I think in these situations, you've got to pretend that you haven't got it and you're going out to win it again.
Absolutely.
It's like any game of footy, Amon, I think if you try to defend it, I think you can have a bit of a negative mindset, because even in the modern game, a draw's not good enough these days, because it goes into extra time, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, on that note, we'll leave it there. Enjoy tomorrow, Stephen. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah. No, good on you, and all the best out there. Everybody keep safe, because it's a horrible day, and if you can make it over to Westlake Boys today, I'm part of a commentary team.
Yeah, yourself and Watto.
With Watto, so looking forward to that. I don't know what that's going to look like, but it should be interesting.
I will say this right now. So you and Watto are a very good commentary pair, mate. You definitely are. You're better, and Watto would be a hell of a lot better with commentsmen than the last one you had at Gribblehurst Park, who was buying raffle tickets and eating hot chips while we were commentating. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. Cheers.
Good on you, mate. Cheers.
Bye. Stephen Harris, brilliant. Good guy. Really good bloke. Anyway, so we'll just go and get Joey Green up next as we talk a bit of rugby league.
In the front, cruising down the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly, red blue lights flash out from behind. Loud voice booming, please step out onto the line. Bellet bridge words of comfort, Cena just hides her eyes. Policeman taps the shades, is that a Chevy 69? How bizarre! How bizarre! How bizarre! Unknown as we're pulling for some gas. A freshly placed poster reveals a smile from the back. Elephants and acrobats, lion's next monkey. Village speaks righteous, Sister Cena says funky. How bizarre! How bizarre! How bizarre!
Ooh, baby, it's making me crazy.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. And before we go any it's been such a busy morning. I've been rushing off my feet, but just before we get to Joey Green, I just need to just do a few promos as well too. So here we go. Sorry, guys, this is taking a bit longer to load up the ads. Anyway, weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boat station, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomato plants happy, all with our water smart tanks. No water restrictions, no worries, and different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. So we say hello to Joey Green. Sorry about that, Joey. I was just didn't realise I'd had to put up a few ads. Anyway, mate, how are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Look, it's not exactly the greatest of weather this weekend, hey, but hopefully by the time we get to 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, we see a bit brighter skies and a great day for Sunday Arvo footy at Go Media Stadium.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk about that. Obviously, Dallin is out, collarbone injury. But coming back in is Tamari Martin at scrum half. And Lau Lili, from a former West Tigers winger, has been given his chance. I was really surprised about that.
Yeah, and so was I. I think especially with Luke Lau Lili moving to Perth next year, coming over on a mid-season transfer from the Tigers and, you know, been plucking away in reserve grade, and he's been quite handy in that reserve grade side as well. I think if we're looking at it from Webby's point of view, like we're 2 weeks out from finals, as much as you probably want to, you know, look at someone like whether it's a Hazen Mellars, whether Adam Pompey comes back into the side, I highly doubt. But you want to look at putting out someone, especially against a Newcastle side who are going to be playing finals football in a few weeks' time, who's going to be capable of doing a job. And I'm not trying to say that, you know, whether it be a Hazen Mellars or a Jylan Ayne even isn't capable of doing a job in a crunch game like this so soon or so close to finals football. But you probably want to put someone in there who's got a bit of first grade experience, is still quite young, and just wants to make the most of his opportunity as well. And I guess a few guys who have been making the most of the opportunities as of late is the three young fellas coming off the bench for the Warriors, the Tanner Stowers-Smiths, the that Eddie Aramia Toyavis, Dimitri Grimonga coming back into the side. They've been making the most of their opportunities off the bench. You're playing a lot more minutes than they usually would and bringing impact, and you don't really see that drop off in the switch up from the Vomongas, the Aramia Toyavas and the Stawa Smith compared to the Mitch Barnetts and the James Fisher-Harris through the middle of the park. So I think that's where the platform for Sunday afternoon is going to be won, against a very tough Newcastle side who on their day can tip up, you know, some of the competition heavyweights. But I think the Warriors at home might just go to that extra level tomorrow afternoon, especially so soon to September and hopefully October football.
Absolutely, mate, absolutely. So we have a look at the NRL week games that have been played. Obviously, a couple of them, there'll be a few games that one game in particular probably didn't mean anything, probably just position on the table. Storm 46, Broncos 20, last game for Payne Haas in a Broncos jersey. Michael Maguire is in big, big trouble at the moment. He's got a lot of issues on his hands. How long he lasts in 2027, well, he has to make a turnaround. For Stacey Jones, he would have been happy with the form of Jerome Hughes.
Yeah, 100%. Very welcome sight to see Jerome Hughes back playing some outstanding football for the Melbourne Storm alongside the rest of that spine and Sofa'alongo, Harry Grant, you know, just the Wizard of Oz seems to be Harry Grant, Cameron Munster. But yeah, I guess the biggest talking point coming out of that game on Thursday night is how much longer is Madge going to last with this Broncos side, especially coming off the back of winning a premiership in 2025, coming into 2026 with basically the same roster, and not being able to, one, even make finals football, and two, not really contending through much of the season as well. So two massive talking points out of the Broncos set up heading into the postseason, whether we see Michael Maguire return in 2027. At the moment, I'd likely say we don't see him as at the Broncos for the foreseeable future, but that, you know, is a conversation for the Broncos front office to be having over the off season.
Absolutely. Then, well, Manly, Seagulls 44, St George Dragons 10. Now, Manly, realistically, still have a chance of making the eight. They still have a chance, possibly even finishing up to seventh place. Now, they were superb. Obviously, the player that was really good, Jamal Fogarty, was brilliant, but Tommy Turbo just showing us how good he is.
Yeah, I think a lot of this Manly side just having a much better crack at the game last night. I think, like you said, Jamal Fogarty just having the ball on a string for the likes of the Tommy Trebojevic's, the Ruben Garrick playing his last game at Brookvale Oval as well before he heads over to the Sydney Roosters next year. And just combining very, very well with this backline for the Manly Seagulls. So whether we see them continue on through the season, it's just going to be able to do this week in, week out, do the Manly Seagulls against the Dragons side, who, yes, as much as they've struggled through the season, very interesting to see the Couchman boys not get as many minutes as they traditionally do. But when your season's basically gone like it was, you know, 8 to 12 weeks ago, what more can you do for St. George Illawarra? So credit to the Manly Seagulls for getting the job done last night, and hopefully we can continue to see this over the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. And then we go to the match last night, Panthers versus Bulldogs. What a spiteful match that was. Really spiteful. Dylan Edwards was at his best. Nathan Cleary's kicking game was on point.
Yeah,
24-10, by the way, the results, people. Sorry.
The Panthers really needed this game, I think, with how their last few weeks have gone. They've had a couple of tough games against the Roosters. The Warriors haven't quite been able to, get the results in that game. Heading in towards finals football, they needed something to get their season back on track. They were starting to fade away a little bit, and I think last night showed that they are still going to be capable of playing really deep into September. I think one thing that they are kind of missing is just that extra bit of fluidity with Isaiah Yeo. Lindy Smith, by no doubt, is doing a very handy job in that 13 role for Penrith, and they're probably trying to set him up for
maybe potentially life without Isaiah Yeo in the next couple of years. I think they're going to need him come these big pressure games through September. How soon he comes back into this side remains to be seen. But if they want to make a run close to October football, they're going to need Isaiah Yeo in the setup.
Absolutely. So we go to the weekend's games and we start off on Saturday. Obviously, the big Titans versus Rabbitohs. This is a big one of the weekend. Roosters versus Dolphins, Cowboys versus Tigers on Saturday. So that first one, I would have to say the Rabbitohs would have, they had a chat, they did push the Warriors at during the game, but the Warriors ended up just being too good. They take on a Titans side. You'd have to favour the Rabbitohs, but they are looking over their shoulder at the Seagulls at the moment.
Yeah, I think if they want to have any chance of playing, you know, in the next few weeks, they're going to need to win a game like this against the Titans side, who, whilst they're not playing too bad a football as the Gold Coast side, they're no shot of playing in a few weeks in finals football. So the Rabbitohs really need to come through in a moment like this against a struggling Titan side. Latrell Mitchell, how we see him come into the matchup this afternoon remains to be seen. There's reports that he might play a super sub role and get, you know, 20, 25 minutes to ease him back into NRL football. And it's going to be a nice touch to see Joey Arrow be able to, in some way, shape or form, finish out the season and get himself to 100 games for the Bunnies. So I'd hope with an occasion like that for the Bunnies and finals football around the corner, they're going to get up for the occasion, and hopefully we can just see the Titans try and disrupt the South Sydney season.
Then we go to this one. I think this one is an interesting one. The Roosters really were shocked last week against the Tigers, but it's the Roosters versus the Dolphins. Now, I think the Dolphins have just been going on such a winning streak, and I don't think what I'm saying is right. I don't think they've lost since round 18. They are on a real run at the moment, and I believe they're the entertainers of the competition.
Yeah, 100%. They can be one of the most dangerous sides in the competition when they want to play football. Apart from the massive hiccup they had against Cronulla at home a few weeks ago, they've still continued on this very red hot run since Anzac Day against the Warriors. We know how good their backline can be with Isaiah Katoa, Cody Nikorima, Hamiso Tabuai-Fido. I don't think we need to go much further than that, but it's really got to have to be up to their forward pack being able to go toe-to-toe with the Roosters forward pack. Seleti Fekete on an edge has been a bit of a revelation for the Roosters. They're still adding that Siwa Wong, Lindsay Collins, Nafahu White. Victor Radley is out of this one, but you still get someone, you know, to replace him in Nat Butcher, who's still a very capable lock as well. So if the Dolphins can go toe-to-toe through the middle of the field, I think they might come up front, but if the Roosters middles, regardless of who's on the field, get the front foot, I think that's where the game's going to be won.
Anyway, we obviously the Cowboys versus Tigers. But, you know, Benji would have had a bit of relief with that win, but Cowboys, I think the Cowboys too good up in Townsville.
Yeah, especially with, well, like a lot of other teams, final football around the corner, you know, whether they, you know, can leapfrog any spots heading in towards September remains to be seen. We saw the Tigers get an upset win last week over the Roosters, which is very good for the Tigers' confidence heading up to the Cowboys. I think the messaging could be quite simple for the Tigers heading up to North Queensland. You know, try and disrupt the Cowboys season, go and enjoy a night out at the Mad Cow following hopefully a Tigers victory. And, you know, just continue to find a bit of confidence for these young fellas. Solo Sekuru has been quite good since his debut for the Tigers. Jock Madden doing a very handy job. So whether we can see these battlers for the West start to continue their role, but I'd hope the Tigers, with September not too far away, can get the victory here.
Absolutely. And, of course, the Eels versus the Sharks. Well, I think the Sharks, the Eels have been pretty average this year.
Yeah, they have been. They haven't been as great as I think they could have been this year. In Cronulla, they just scraped home with a win against the Gold Coast last weekend. We don't see Braden Trindle for another few weeks, so Nephi Puttie gets another start in the 5-8 role. I think they're just going to need to keep chipping away towards September as well. It's games like these where it could be very easy for them to drop off. And like a number of other sides, they want to be riding a wave of confidence heading into the back end of the season. And they're going to need to win games, especially at Parramatta. Parramatta, never really an easy side to play a Combank Stadium. And I think on Sunday afternoon, which isn't really the Sharks' favourite time slot, they're going to be needing a massive win here.
Anyway, and of course the Warriors, Wahine, take on the Dragons. Obviously, Warriors in the top six want to get into playoffs.
Yeah, not too far away from playoffs already in the NRLW. We see Anastasia Sekine get a debut for the NRLW side. A great product coming out of the Mount Albert Lions, and a great story as well, if you want to read more into that. The Dragons, still struggling to put wins together over the last few weeks. Have the Dragons and the Warriors at home. I think they're just going to be too strong for the Dragons this afternoon. They've got a very young and energetic four pack, and I think off the back of that, they're going to be able to get the job done tomorrow and hopefully make it double wins for the Warriors tomorrow at home.
Absolutely. Anyway, we will obviously next week the National Secondary School Boys Tournament out at Bruce Pullman Park, I hope. And I'd like to wish my old school, St Thomas's of Canterbury College, hopefully we can get another National League rugby title. And Joey, if you're refereeing, you'd be easy on those St Thomas's boys.
I tell you what, of hanging up the whistle for the tournament and helping out with our schools, James Cook High School recently changed our name to Te Haikura Akiwa, so it'll be our first national tournament under the new new banner. But we're really excited to head out to Bruce Pullman Park next weekend, back in the championship grade four. The competition, and with the hopes of winning that grade and finding ourselves in the premiership competition next year. So very eager to see our boys get out there. Hopefully the weather's not like today, and we can play a pretty exciting brand of football to hopefully win a national title next weekend.
Well, I tell you what, mate, I can only see it going down to Middle Park Road Sopburn and Christchurch to my old school, St Thomas's. On that note, you have a wonderful weekend, young fella.
Always a pleasure, mate, and we'll chat again next week.
Cheers, mate. That was Joey Green. Oh, geez, that was Joey Green. Next up, we have Broda Nucky from One News as we do the week that was and the weekend ahead. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. Just before we get on to our next guest, updates on Foxy in the PGA. He is about 11th place at this stage, but he has definitely in the top. He will definitely be in the top 15 for the cut. Anyway, before we go any further, This segment brought to you by Enterprise Recruitment. Finding the right people can be hard, and there are so many unexpected surprises. So cut out those unexpected surprises by contacting Enterprise Recruitment, where they will find you the right candidate to suit your business needs. So contact enterprise.co.nz with branches nationwide and find the right people. Here to join us from One News, Broden Nucky. It's a week that was and the weekend ahead. Good morning, Broden.
Morning, mate. How's it going?
Oh, listen, good, good, good. I was speaking with your old mate a few weeks ago, the old Giant Slayer. You know, he was in good form, so it was actually good. Anyway, we might as well look at what's happened since last Saturday. Go Media Stadium, obviously the big thing was Black Ferns very dominant over the Wallaroos. A really good touching point. It's great to see that the O'Reilly Cup was presented to the winning captains from Lauren O'Reilly, who was the daughter of the late Laurie O'Reilly, who the cup is named after. I felt that was pretty good, but the Black Ferns were just too good.
Yeah, too good. It really puts them, I think, in a great place, obviously, for what is a very important couple of months ahead of them. Obviously, now going overseas to play South Africa, France, England and Scotland. Obviously, the European part of that league is where the big rivals are, but that South Africa game, as well as part of that double header with the All Blacks tour, that's going to be a real special moment for those ladies as well. So for them to be in the form that they're in and the destructive way that they're in is what they showed at Mount Smart, I think it puts them in a really good stead for what they will recognise as an important few months ahead.
Absolutely. And of course then later on in the night we went across to Sydney. The Warriors at times challenged against the Rabbitohs, but came out too good and with a big win. And of course probably one thing, Big Dallin, an injury to him, hopefully he's right by finals. But your thoughts on the Warriors?
Yeah, I mean, once again, there's something different about the squad this year in that I feel like in the past we would have seen, you know, when the Rabbitohs started coming back in that second half, you wouldn't be surprised that some Warriors fans are probably thinking, oh, here we go, they're gonna lose their way here. But there's something about the squad this year that when the chips are stacked against them or their backs are against the wall, they're finding the ways. And it's the same as, you know, you mentioned Dallin there. They have had significant injuries through the squad this season, and last year we saw that happen as well, and it kind of did derail them. They ran out of steam when they got to this part of the year. This year, it only seems to galvanise them. Guys are stepping into these roles, stepping up when they needed to, and they keep producing the results. So, look, really exciting times. Obviously, they're chasing their top two finish. We were speaking to Andrew Webster this week. There's no talk in the minor premiership. All the focus is on that top two finish and wanting to secure home playoff games for the entirety of the finals.
Absolutely. And of course then Sunday morning, wow, wasn't it brilliant? The All Blacks 33, South Africa 16. Just a wonderful performance.
I mean even now I'm still lost for words. It's just so refreshing when you think of where we were 12 months ago to the performance that they put out there at Ellis Park, one of the true fortresses of Test rugby. And just to see these guys playing with the confidence that they had, even when things, once again, weren't going their way, obviously the set piece was an area that they spoke about afterwards, and particularly the scrum that they want to get right. But even when things weren't going their way, they were looking for the answers. And, you know, you had some individuals step up big time in that. I thought George Bauer coming off the bench and helping stabilise that scrum was a big one. And, it makes me so excited for the rest of these next two tests and then obviously their final test over in Baltimore as well.
Absolutely. And, of course, then Monday morning, Liam Lawson gets a chance to drive in Red Bull at Red Bull 1 and finishes 7th in the Dutch Grand Prix, and really Liam Lawson just proving himself against the odds all the time.
How good. I mean, I sort of said earlier this week on Breakfast, the Red Bull redemption for me for Liam, I felt like last year when he was given that opportunity and obviously it was taken away from him after just two races, it very much felt like he was trying to be an F1 Red Bull driver, whereas coming back into it this year, he very much looked like an F1 driver that was in a Red Bull. He wasn't trying to live up to these expectations or comparisons to Verstappen or any of those other things. He came in, he knew his job, he's got that little bit more of experience, he's got that bit of confidence under him after a fantastic year so far with Racing Bulls, and he just went out and did a job. He knew he didn't have the fastest car on the track, but he knew that he would be in the points if he raced a good race, and that's what he did.
Absolutely, and of course Stephen Elker, a win on the seniors tour, fantastic result for them, and of course the netball player crisis, it gets worse and worse by the day, Broden. It looks as though out of the 18 players that have been contracted in Silver Ferns, there is only four, and for obvious reasons, the likes of Phoenix Carrico will be starting because obviously she has a young family. Her husband Pat Tuipiloto has contracted the Blues, so she can't move. But there are a number of players who have just I spoke to one when I was at the supermarket. They're just not too sure what's happening. Most of our squad, 95% of them are going to be playing in Australia. Now, the Australians, Lisa Gregory's getting a bit upset because she's saying we're getting too many Kiwis in our competition.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I think the first thing to say is you can't blame the players. You know, this is their livelihoods that we're talking about here. So they are looking for options. And unfortunately, with the way things are at the moment, I know Netball New Zealand saying they're looking at multiple options for 2027. But, you know, from talking to sources, one of those options or one of the prominent options that we're hearing is an amateur competition. So these players are looking for their livelihoods, and right now those opportunities are overseas. As you said, many of them are in Australia, but also some are even having to go as far as the UK. So you cannot blame them for continuing to look after themselves. In terms of where we go from here, it's a tough ask, isn't it? I mean, even if we do get this rumored proposal set up by Ali Williams and Anna Mowbray. In terms of bringing in privatisation for the competition, you know, some of these players like Grayson Weke, they're signing multi-year deals over in Australia now. And I get that the Aussies may be a little bit upset about a lot of our ladies going over there. But, in the same token, we used to have Aussies coming across to us as well in the competition. So if it's going to help keep netball as a global sport going, I think we just have to accept that right now this is the best for those that are in the tough situation.
Absolutely. All Blacks had a very, very, very close win over the Golden Lions, and I have to say, geez, I can tell you something, Rico Oney and Ethan Blackadder really must have pushed, had Dave Rennie thinking as well too.
Yeah. I mean, that game for me was always going to be hard because obviously you are coming off the excitement of that first test and how well the guys played. And you've got to remember the ones that are helping prep that midweek team are the ones that have just played a full physical 80 minutes against those Blacks at Ellis Park. So, you know, in terms of preparations and everything, it was always going to be tough. And that midweek team has had a lot of injuries and changes and guys brought in at the last minute that have had to help boost them up as well. I mean, we've even seen on the old social media there, Lima Sopawang is over there as a content creator, and he's jumping into training to help out. So that really shows you just how difficult it is. But, you know, as you mentioned there, Ethan Blackadder had a great game. Rico Ioane, it's great to see him back and at some of his best playing out there as well in the back line, wherever they're putting him. And we'll certainly give Rennie a couple of headaches, I think. Not so much for this test, obviously, but maybe next week with the third test as to what he wants to really do with the squad.
And then, of course, Auckland FC went down to Al Hilal 1-0 in the Intercontinental Cup. Obviously, there are obviously a bit of announcement coming that they're playing a pre-season down in Napier. But And then, of course, then we look ahead to the weekend ahead. Obviously, for you, the Farah Palmer Cup starts, and TVNZ will be covering that. And we just have a huge weekend. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. We've got the All Blacks versus South Africa. We have the Warriors versus the Knights. And then we've got the Big Shield Challenge in Whangarei.
Yeah, I mean, take your pick, right? I mean, there's so much great sport happening this weekend. For me, I am really excited about the Shield defence tomorrow. I mean, those scenes last week where the Taniwha took the Shield back to the North and just the welcome they got, what it meant to the players, you know, the emotion that was in that arrival, that to me, that is provincial rugby. That is the NPC at its core. It is pride in the province. So I'm expecting a massive turnout for those guys. And, you know, we my colleague Michelle Banks, she caught up with Blue, one of the more famous Northland supporters during the week there. Like, once again, that is NPC at its purest. There's a guy who's been following that team for 46 years, and he finally got to see them bring the Shield home. That's rugby at its best. So I can't wait for that. Obviously, you know, I think as well, All Blacks game, Warriors game, they're going to be great too. But that Shield defence tomorrow, doesn't get much better.
Mate, love your work, Broden Nucky. It's always great to have a chat to you, and obviously for you know, we look forward to a great weekend of sports, and hopefully we can chat soon, mate.
Absolutely, mate. Always enjoy coming on here. Give us a bell.
Yep, no worries at all. Cheers, thanks a lot. Broden Nucky from One News, and he is just absolutely fantastic, isn't he? Great listen. Anyway, next up, we've got the big fella in talking football with Seamus Martin from Between Two Beers. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. Hey, if you're looking to buy, you're looking to sell, you're looking to, you know, looking for advice to get on this Auckland property market, well, I know two people, and they're two good mates of mine. It's Robert and his lovely wife, Deborah Thompson from Team Thompson. And I can tell you something, they have so much knowledge. They get the results that you deserve. They give you the best advice, and they're both superb people. They operate out of the Barford and Thompson office in Epsom, but, you know, they're always willing to have a chat to you. Now, this is Robert's number is 021-737-949, or you can email him r.thompson@barfords.co.nz. And if you can't get hold of Robert, give Deborah a call. Her number is 021-673-600 or d.thompson@barfords.co.nz. Anyway, here to join us is the fantastic Seamus Martin from Between Two Beers. Good morning to you, Seamus.
Look, I might be fantastic in the podcast world, but pretty horrendous in the...
Hey, listen, we're consistent. You know, like what did Meatloaf say? He said 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Not 2 out of 9 is just terrible, Seamus. Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Well,
but
I heard there's some conjecture that it might have got 1 out of 9, but I might have changed my mind on last minute on one of the results. But look, no matter how you dress it up, it was a horrendous first week of picks, but a phenomenal first week of results. I don't think many would have predicted some of the way those Premier League results went.
Oh, don't mention, I was at a function and I ran into the only Hull City supporter at a function last night. So, yeah, that's how my day's going. Anyway, we'll get Intercontinental Cup during the week. And, of course, Auckland went down to Al Halan and 1-0. But I have to say, there was some promising stuff out of Auckland FC.
Yeah, some really nice passages of play, wasn't there? It was a good hit out, great preseason game for Auckland FC. Massive experience, a week in Saudi Arabia, preparing for this one-off clash against Al Ahly of Saudi Arabia. And you saw with the crowd how well supported they are, and what a difficult assignment it was. And I think a result like that, disappointed probably the way they conceded the goal, but they'd been hanging on for a while. A couple of opportunities in the first half through Logan Rogerson where they could have taken the lead and perhaps taken the crowd out of the match. But look, I was really impressed. I was really impressed with that first competitive hit out. Great news overnight as well that Western Sydney Wanderers and Napier in September will be another step on the road to kicking off to defending the A-League title in October. So, look, it bodes well. I think they'll be straight back onto the training pitch after shaking off a little bit of jet lag. And excellent to see Auckland FC continue to build their brand in the community and take the team on the road.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. And I think, and hopefully they may take a game in the next this season, maybe take one game down to your part of the world.
Yeah, look, I think there's a really healthy appetite of support here in Hamilton for Auckland FC. There's a number that go up every weekend or when they can to go and support the game. So, no, look, it is really good. And I think just looping back to the game itself, I thought it was wonderful. Again, it's an abnormality, but they've taken the opportunity. The team that won the OFC Pro League is the team that qualified them forward to this Intercontinental Cup. But, it was the majority of A-League players, but great to see the likes of Daniel Norman step up, the young Norwegian midfielder who, came out to New Zealand almost on a wing and a prayer, linked up with Western Springs and had a desire to play for Auckland FC, has come through this Pro League side and has now earned himself an A-League contract. Ronan Wynn, another young player to come through, also got some minutes on the pitch. So, look, the pathway system that Auckland FC are putting in place is excellent as well, and they'll be looking to defend not only the A-League title but also that OFC Pro League title when that competition gets back underway as well later on this year.
Absolutely, and of course, then we go down to Wellington. We spoke about the men's last week, but the Wellington Phoenix women, they have just been... They just get whatever they're doing to attract these players over there. Another big signing, Indy Paige Riley, the All White who was playing for Crystal Palace in the WSL. She's coming back to New Zealand to play for the Phoenix Woman. This is huge.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you messaged me through the week. What a great signing it was, and I can't help but agree. Another statement of intent from Bev Priestman and the Wellington Phoenix, adding a football fern into the roster, another football fern into the roster, all ready to go with the very, very experienced Matilda, Australian international, and Tamika Yallop, and of course Abby Ursig, who's coming home to play for the first time in a long time. So, look, they are assembling another great squad. I remember saying this time last year that the signings that Bev Priestman was making with the likes of Samba coming across looked to be really impressive, and she's just built on that again, hasn't she, in terms of the group that they're assembling down there in Wellington. But you say that, and then it's almost tit for tat, isn't it? I've noticed Melbourne City are also, big in the transfer market, bringing home Australian internationals back to play in the A-League as well. So look, it both be a great season, and news this week as well that the women's team will kick off their season with a couple of double headers together with the men's team at Henry Stadium, which will be awesome for the home fans to get in behind and celebrate last year and also look ahead to this year. So great news coming out of Wellington in terms of the draw, in terms of the fixtures, and I bet they can't wait to get out on the pitch.
Absolutely. Well, we go to the final week of the Northern League. It has been a fantastic competition. So we're going to kick it off with the Northern League Women's. Now, at the moment, as it stands, Auckland United have 53 points. Eastern Suburbs have 53 points. Auckland United have superior goal differences. This is the matches for today. Now, Western Springs versus Fencibles, West Coast Rangers versus FC Tauranga Moana, Melville versus Eastern Suburbs, and I know, Seamus, you're going to pick it as a draw, and Auckland United versus Ellerslie.
Yeah, it's been a phenomenal competition, hasn't it? That midweek win for Auckland United over Fencibles United, 2-0, has set up this final stage. And as you rightly point out, superior goal difference for Auckland United. I think, again, they'll both be in the winner's circle, but the sheer volume of goals that Auckland United have scored this season will mean they lift the trophy. Don't forget, they missed out on the trophy last year, pipped by West Coast Rangers. So good to get the Northern League title back into the trophy cabinet at Keith Hay Park. I think in terms of the matches, the top four is already decided, so there's no jostling for teams looking to get into the National League at the last moment. It will be West Coast Rangers in fourth, up against Tauranga Wana this weekend, who will have no problem, I don't think, in defeating the team from the Bay of Plenty, who will finish in bottom spot, I should say. Auckland United versus Ellerslie, that's first place fifth, but fifth is a long way off West Coast Rangers, so I think Auckland United will win that one pretty comfortably. Eastern Suburbs versus Melville United. Look, I'm not going to tip it as a draw this week. I think Eastern Suburbs and Auckland United have been far too superior for a lot of the teams in this league, and Melville shouldn't pose too much of a threat to Eastern Suburbs. I think they'll win that one and join Auckland United on 56 points. But as we've spoken, goal difference will be the determining factor there. And Western Springs versus Fencibles. Well, Western Springs are a shadow. They have been a shadow of their former selves this season. A rebuild over at Seddon Fields. Fencibles finishing in third. I think they will also win this final game this weekend.
And book themselves into the National League. Anyway, we also go to the men's. Well, Birkenhead are the clear winners. So this is today's matches all at 3 o'clock. Fencibles versus Western Springs. Tauranga City versus Manukau. Now, that one, I think we could convincingly say that. That will be a win for probably Tauranga. Melville versus Auckland FC. We have Eastern Suburbs versus Auckland FC Reserves. East Coast Bays versus Auckland United. And Bay Olympic versus Birkenhead. So, when we look at these games, a number of games which are going to be very, very crucial. That first one, Fencibles versus Western Springs.
Yeah, Fencibles dropped out of the top four. Perhaps an eye on the Chatham Cup final in a couple of weeks' time. They're on 38 points and a goal difference of plus 17. So in fifth place, unless results go their way, I can't see them. I can't see them making the. Can I? Let's take it one game at a time. Fencibles will beat Western Springs. That's what I'm predicting today. That will take them to 41 points. We've already spoken about the Tauranga Manukau game. That's bottom plays bottom. So Tauranga, I think, win that one and confine Manukau United to bottom place. Tauranga won't move off 11th place. So those two teams will finish in the bottom two. Melbourne versus Auckland City. Finishing back off a trip to Fiji where they successfully won the OFC Champions League with a 2-0 win over Central Coast from the Solomon Islands. I think they might rest a few of their players that played a big part in that Fijian competition, which might give Melville an opportunity to spring an upset. Auckland will have an eye on second place. They're currently chasing Eastern Suburbs, who are 2 points ahead of them. So Auckland will know that a win, they'll need to win if they are to secure second place. They want to finish as high up in the table as they possibly can, but I think that game might be a little bit of an upset. Melbourne United could beat Auckland City. There you go. There's my upset of the weekend. Eastern Suburbs versus Auckland FC Reserves. I think Eastern Suburbs should win that game against Auckland FC Reserves, but Auckland FC Reserves is a bit of a joker in the pack, so that one could even end up a draw. But this is the big game, is East Coast Bays versus Auckland United. Fourth plays fifth. Fourth place sixth, I should say. Both teams on 38 points. East Coast Bay's goal difference probably stands against them, but Auckland United need to win to guarantee keeping Fencibles United at bay off the back of goal difference. So that's a huge game over at Bay City Park, and I could see Auckland, East Coast Bay's father getting up for that final one and giving themselves the best chance possible to qualify. And Bay Olympic versus Burko, as you rightly said, Burko trophies in the cabinet. Bay Olympic, nothing to play for but pride. I think Burko will end up winning that one. So, look, my eyes are going to be on Fencibles United versus Western Springs and East Coast Bays versus Auckland United. One of Fencibles, East Coast Bays and Auckland United will go through. And if I was a betting man, I would suggest that it's probably going to be Fencibles United that sneak in and cap off a remarkable season of a Northern League top four finish and a Chatham Cup final.
And just before we go to the EPL, if you finish fifth in the Northern League, you will go in a three-way National League playoff to see who gets a final spot in the National League for next year. So hope hasn't all gone, but you want to make it secure. But I think you're right. Let's go to our world-famous EPL picks. And, of course, this morning, yeah, I know, this morning, Manchester City just too good for Crystal Palace. I think Palace really, to me, that could be a very tough season for them this year.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think there's a few clubs that are in the same boat as Crystal Palace. I put Fulham in that conversation. I put Leeds in that conversation as well. They haven't seemed to click. Look, it's very early days. Only match week two this week. But yeah, Crystal Palace, already the signs aren't fantastic, are they, at Selhurst Park? They're also in European competition again this year, which will be, you know, a difficult proposition playing, you know, sort of Sunday, Thursday. So, squad depth will come into consideration. But Man City, two wins from two matches. Pep Guardiola. They've already forgotten about him, haven't they? And they've moved right on.
Absolutely. Anyway, let's have a look at the Saturday-Sunday games in the EPL. Liverpool versus Nottingham Forest. As big as Sugar Daddy Big Bill's AFC Bournemouth versus Everton. Coventry versus Hull City. And Spurs versus Newcastle United. So that first one, and I'm going to have to say, I'm going for Liverpool on this one.
Yeah, as a Liverpool fan myself, I think this is a good fixture after a tough point at Newcastle United at St James's Park. They needed right up until the ninth minute of stoppage time to rescue a point from there. First match for Iriola in charge, and I think this home game against the Nottingham Forest side, who I actually would also put in that conversation with Crystal Palace as a side that could potentially struggle this season, I think Liverpool will win that game. I'm predicting a draw between Bournemouth and Everton. I think those two sides started well last weekend. Bournemouth are showing that they don't miss Iriola, aren't they, after that first week? But I think that one finishes in a draw. Coventry versus Hull is a battle of two teams that have come back up from the Championship. I think Coventry, as the Championship winners, start as favourites, and I'm going to tip them to beat Hull, who surprised Manchester United last week with a real passionate performance at home.
You didn't have to go that far. You know,
look, I think Coventry edged that one just on recent form. And Spurs Newcastle, I'm tipping as a draw. Spurs are, geez, they're spending some money at the moment, aren't they, Spurs?
Oh God, yes.
That Newcastle side backs against the wall. Newcastle, I think they want another one that could be a difficult season ahead. But they started well against Liverpool, unlucky to only come away with a draw. I think they'll get a point on the road in London, and Spurs fans will be scratching their heads, going, "Geez, are we going to go through this again?"
Absolutely. So then we have a look at the Monday and Tuesday games in the EPL. Obviously, Monday we have Chelsea versus Brighton, Leeds versus Brentford, Sunderland versus Fulham, Manchester United versus Ipswich, and our Tuesday game, Aston Villa versus Arsenal. So Chelsea versus Brighton.
Yeah. Well, you'll recall last year I said Chelsea were my smokies to go far, and they didn't get anywhere near it. I thought they were it was a seesaw game against Fulham, wasn't it, to open up their season. I think this is going to be a draw against Brighton. Brighton are a really difficult proposition. They really, really are. Surprised me last season. Surprised me last week. So I'm gonna say that one finishes as a draw. I think Brentford beat Leeds away from home as my only away team victory this week. On the Sunday. I think Sunderland's home form against Fulham will see them through. I think they win that game. And I think Man United bounce back against Ipswich. It's been a favourable draw, hasn't it, for Manchester United on paper, two of the promoted sides in the first 2 weeks. Ipswich also were in the winners' column last week, a surprise win from my mind. But I think Man United, rather, should win that one at Old Trafford and get that campaign underway at home with a win. Another away win, I should say, would be Arsenal against Aston Villa, who looked horrendous last week, Aston Villa. They looked really, really poor in their fixture, a 4-0 loss, but Arsenal, it's their title to lose, so I'm predicting them to win almost every week at the moment. They look phenomenal.
Absolutely. Well, I hope you, thank you very much. I hope we'll talk next week. I've got a feeling it's going to be better than 2 out of 9 this week. I think we could be looking at it for at least a 6 or 7 out of 9.
Look, I'll take a 3 out of 9. Look, if it's progress every week, I'll take a 3 out of 9. But yeah, I do remember I woke up on Sunday morning. I didn't watch any of the games actually overnight, and I checked the results very quickly, and straight away I realised I was 0 from 4 to kick off the weekend, which wasn't a fantastic start. So anything, if just get one on the board on the first night of fixtures, I'll be a happy man.
Absolutely. Well, you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll catch up again, Seamus. Cheers.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Cheers. Seamus Martin, brilliant. Well, we are going to approve. I think we're in for a good week this week, so put your money on us. Anyway, let's play a bit of music. Next up, we talk the greatest rivalry tour with South African John O'Connor. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend Ender, and of course the greatest rivalry tour. Well, we're going to get a South African view from this, and he's a South African who's lived quite a while in New Zealand. He's down the lovely part of the Waikato, and he's been a columnist for Rugby 365 in South Africa. Really knows his rugby. At times controversial, but I always enjoy him. He's always good. He always gives an honest opinion, and it's always great to chat to him. John O'Connor, good morning to you.
Good morning, Matt. How are you doing?
It's good. It's good. Now, we come into the second test. The All Blacks are leading the series 1-0, but I have to say, your views on last week, and now I'm just from a South African perspective. Obviously, the All Blacks were very, very good, and you have to give it to them. But obviously, Rassie's made some changes there, and Rassie does this, and when he makes these changes, it's like it works for him.
Yes, you've got to say that. I mean, any coach... Now, remember, of course, that Rusty wasn't the coach of the Springboks for the second of their World Cup wins in a row, but he was very much involved as director of rugby and as somebody who had worked with Jacques Nienaber for 15 years before that. So if you put Rusty in as somebody who's been intimately involved with not only 2 World Cup wins in a row, a very good win, considering how South Africa hadn't played rugby for over a year, the South African players when they beat the Lions, as well as a resurrection from 57-0, and the involvement, by the way, from young fellas of many of these Springbok players that are running out on the field for tomorrow morning's game, our time, then you've got to give him credit. No coach makes zero mistakes. No coach makes zero selection errors. No coach makes zero tactical errors when it comes to making a game plan. But certainly over time, Rusty has got an argument for being, if not the greatest coach of all time in rugby, he's certainly up there in the conversation.
Yeah, he is, and I have to say that he's very clinical in his selections, and he always has been quite clinical since being involved in the South African side. Obviously, the big boost for South Africa, Siya Kolisi is back. He's been past fit for the second international in Cape Town. But I look at the South African side, and obviously many would say that, you know, listening to what AJ Wetton, he was over in South Africa, and he said the view from many South Africans was is that they probably, the South African side, probably some of the players that were on there weren't, had looked like they were short of a gallop.
Yes. There was quite a gap, probably about a month, since they had full contact in a match situation. So certainly the cohesion was lacking. You certainly saw that when they started trying to move the ball through the hands and playing the ball out the back. There were balls that were dropped. There were balls on the ground. But also, you know, give some credit to both the All Blacks in their defensive systems as well as the nous of the All Black coaching team, because a lot of the ball that the South Africans had, even though they had physical dominance, it was very disrupted by the tactics of the All Blacks around the breakdown. Some very clever tactics that, you know, and I'm not making this about the ref. You play to what the ref whistles. And if your opposition is getting away with something and the ref is not calling it and they're disrupting your ball, you need to sort that out. I mean, Richie McCaw, who, to my mind, as much as I say this through gritted teeth, is probably the greatest rugby player of all time. He made a living by living right on the law, on the edge of the law, and then assessing where it was and playing according to that. And a lot of the mistakes that the Springboks made, yes, were based on a lack of cohesion, maybe a lack of game time, but also because a lot of the ball that they got was quite disrupted. So they didn't have the space and time when it came to working the ball through the hand.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that one, John. I think the biggest take back I took from last week was is that the All Blacks were able to absorb that pressure in the scrums. When George Bell came on, the scrum changed and they were able to take the pressure from South Africa. And I think Dave Rennie would be happy. And you've also probably got to realise this. Dave Rennie's got a good record against South Africa, John.
Yes, he does. Dave Rennie is a really good coach. Let's front up and say that. It was a tough decision that the New Zealand Rugby Board took to release for the first time ever a coach, or let's call it what it is, to fire a coach midway through his contract. Never been done before, but they looked at the results, they looked at the trajectory of the team and said, are we likely to win the World Cup in 2027? And the answer was no, and they pulled the trigger. Now, as time has gone by, and especially as we see a difference in performance and a difference in demeanor of the All Blacks and in the way that they appear to be interacting with each other and enjoying the game, certain things become more clear because there's a stark comparison that happens when we look at the whole situation. We say, oh, we see something different. And I think probably over the years, more stuff will come out, what was going on under Razor. But certainly, Dave Rennie is an astute coach. And in many ways, it points out to just, to me at least, how poor the depth of talent is in Australia, that a coach that can achieve what he's done within the space of, what is it now, 4 test matches?
Yep.
The improvement that he's brought about. And just the fact, I mean, his win record with Australia was something like 34%, which is really poor. But he obviously is not a stupid coach. But it just shows just how far Australia have fallen over the last 20 years.
It certainly does, and I think, well, you know, it's like getting rid of a Rolls Royce when they got rid of Dave Rennie and brought in Nettie Jones and replacing it with a Murray Minor, to be honest with you, John.
Look, again, I don't think that Eddie Jones is a poor coach.
No, I don't
He's
think
not
that...
everybody's cup of tea. No. But the question is not what Dave Rennie's capability when it comes to Australia, which is a whole different discussion. Australia for 25 years, probably maybe 20 to 25 years, have not had a pack that can stand up to the rigors of international high level rugby, especially week after week. Now what you're seeing in the All Black pack is a resurrection, at least at the breakdown. That's the big thing. When it comes to the breakdown and to ball and contact play, the All Blacks are way, way better now than they were a year ago.
They are a way better team. So what do you think the tactics are from Rassie for tonight's match? Just what tactics do you think South Africa will bring to this game?
Well, it's a lot dependent on the weather. So nobody's quite sure of what's going to happen weather-wise in Cape Town. To explain to your listeners, South Africa has two major distinct weather patterns. So Cape Town and parts of what is called the Eastern Cape, right, as far as just short of Port Elizabeth, they have a Mediterranean climate, a lot like New Zealand, maybe just a bit drier in summer. And so wintertime rainfall is quite common, whereas the rest of South Africa has a very dry winter and a wet summer. So that's why you get those wonderful running rugby conditions on the Highveld, because it's dry in winter. And you get beautiful sunny weather in Durban. It's dry this time of year. But when it comes to Cape Town, it can change on a dime, a bit like Auckland. So they're not sure whether there's going to be rain. Plus, that field can be quite slick. It's not being played in the evenings. It's being played at 7 p.m. So there's not necessarily as much dew on the ground as you would if they were playing at 7. But it can be that the footing under there can be a bit wet. The ball can be a bit wet. It's very much dependent on that. If the ball is dry and there isn't rain, I think that you might see some ball-in-hand stuff that you did not see when South Africa played, but at the Highveld. But certainly what you're going to see is a very strong scrum emphasis. And that is my biggest concern for the All Blacks. Starting with last year at Eden Park, I happened to be there with my sons, and we were behind the poles at the All Black end of the field for the second half, and I had never, ever seen an All Black scrum go backwards like they were on roller skates, like they were in their one try the Springboks scored. They just shunted the All Blacks off their own ball and scored a try. And no matter what happened last week, there still are very concerning signs. You just don't see an All Black scrum go backwards. The only other time, even against Springboks, that I ever saw that happen was a game against Italy in Italy, where the All Blacks conceded 7 scrum penalties in a row, and Nick Mallett happened to be the coach of Italy at the time and nearly lost his mind. And afterwards, the ref apologized to him. He said he should have carded one of the All Black props. That is the only time in all the years that I've watched the All Blacks play that I've seen them, as they have been in the last two seasons, go backwards in the scrum. It just doesn't happen. Now, is that a function of South Africa having, you know, a once-in-a-generation scrum, maybe the greatest scrum ever? That could be. But is it a weakness that the scrumming is poor? I don't know. I would, if I was New Zealand, I would certainly have Mike Cron coming in the next year to work not just with the All Blacks, but at all levels. I don't think it's healthy for rugby in New Zealand that the scrum is just seen as a starter point for general phase play like they do in league. Rugby is meant to be a contest at every level. And is this an endemic thing across all black across all New Zealand teams? I'm not so sure, but it certainly is concerning when you see the All Blacks getting in scrum like that.
And I'm going to say this right now. You're right, John. And you know, I've agreed with you three times. I've shaken my head in the studio going, yeah, because it is an endemic problem as front rowers. Not only, it's, you know, you see teams cannot field teams because they can't find front rowers. Nobody wants to be an ugly prop. They want to be a pretty winger when they're at school.
Yeah, and one of the beauties of our game and one of the reasons why we love it so much is that it is a game for all shapes and sizes. If you look at a game of league, there is not a huge variation in body shape. Yes, you have a few nippy little fellas. Maybe you have, in the halves, you have different rugby shapes. But generally, across the board, the majority of the league players look like maybe... if you could say they look like loose forwards in a union game, or possibly a modern midfield, these very large midfields that you see running around in rugby, as certainly at test level. And that's the standard body shape. The beauty of our game is that there is a place for the fatty boom booms, right?
You know, we're not allowed to call people fat anymore, John.
Well, it's going to happen right here. There is a place for the fatty boom booms, right? And there is a place for the fella that his mother calls big boned, right? And yes, as you get further and further in rugby, you need to get fitter and your cardiovascular level needs to increase, and you need to get your body fat percentage down. But these certain raw boned, short squat, I mean, look at Oxenchair, right? He is, without a doubt, the best loose head in the world. He's been out for quite a few months, but remember, it was the first prop ever to be nominated for World Rugby Player of the Year last year. And when you look at him, he's a walking example of, he famously said, when asked about his diet, and he'd replied, his favorite food is chocolate cake. And he said, because salads don't win scrums, right? So that's the beauty of our game. And I don't think that it's healthy if we lose. I don't want to say it's an emphasis, but the importance of a scrum. A scrum is meant to be a test of your manhood. It really is.
Yep.
Having played in the forwards, if you get shunted backwards, it is not a good feeling. You feel like somebody has reached through your soul and removed your testicles from your chest.
Oh, thanks, right? John.
right? So that is part of the gladiatorial combat that is rugby, is the scrum. Just as is the line-out, it takes great bravery to launch yourself in the air and trust the two players below you to hold you up there, right, when you're reaching upwards with all your might. I mean, you're completely vulnerable. So rugby is gladiatorial. It requires courage. Whether you are facing Jasper Visser coming at you like a raging bull, whether you are facing an opposing scrum, whether you're leaping in the air for a ball and, you know, that's been hoofed a million miles in the air by it won't be Andre Pollard this week, but whatever the case is, it requires courage, it requires strength, and it is a combat sport, right? So for us to lose those because we want to emphasize ball and play, I think we shouldn't be trying to be like league. We should be trying to be more different than league, because it is the differences that make rugby stand out.
Absolutely, John. Well, we better wrap it up here because I just have to move along. But thank you so much. Enjoy the test tonight, John. And I've got no doubts we will be talking again.
Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy it as well. Up to a point. I hope you don't take that personally, but I hope that you experience a wonderful game of rugby followed by a need for tissues.
Oh, John, you always like to push it, John. Always great having a chat. Take care, mate.
Thank you, mate.
Yeah. John O'Connor, he loves... Oh, he's good. He's bloody... God, he's a funny bugger. He makes you laugh, and he's not scared to give it a bit of a wind-up. So, yeah, good talking to him. Anyway, next up we have the panel, Lee Piper and Miles Davis.
Thank you.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Sorry about this. We're just trying to get hold of Miles. And he's turned off his phone. So that's really good. You arrange your interview 2 days ahead. So I will be having a chat to Miles about that. Anyway, just if you're looking to find your local in Mount Eden, it's a Horse and Trap. They're based at 3 Enfield Street in Mount Eden, close to the new Mungify station. They have a good daily drinks and food specials. And then the food is fantastic. I've had the odd meal there. The Sunday roast is brilliant. Always have some specials on drinks, whether it's craft beer or bottle beer. And, you know, they've got a fantastic function room. So their number is 09603055, or you can email them info@horseandtrap.co.nz. Anyway, I don't know where Miles is, but I've got Lee Piper. G'day, Lee. How are you?
I'd say you've had more than a few meals there, but that's not for me to say.
Oh, for Christ's sake. You're already starting, Piper, you know. This show was running perfectly until Davis decided to turn off his phone after reminders twice, but, you know, I will be giving him a call. It's not good enough. Not good enough.
No, drop him, mate. Drop him.
Well, he's a lot taller than me.
I don't mean drop him that way.
I think Miles is fruit to give me a bit of a touch up in the past, but he's a good bugger. But your thoughts on the All Blacks South Africa, and while you're doing that, I'll try him one more time. Okay.
Yeah. Look, I think what the All Blacks did well was they hung into that game and they got themselves through a lot of adversity. It was interesting to listen to Ruben Love's take after the game. I heard a podcast this week with Marty Devlin on it, and he basically said we didn't play that well. And I think that was probably came through and the players that I've talked to, same thing. You know, we did our best. We got there in the end. And I think there was a real thought that with 20 minutes to go, if we're in the game, we'll probably roll over the top. And that's what it proved. There was critical parts of that game. I think, and we'll probably talk about what will happen, you know, tonight and tomorrow morning, New Zealand time. But, you know, I think there's a lot to give in this All Black time. I don't think they played that well. You know, obviously the scrum has come under scrutiny this week. That was an area of concern for sure. But I think while everybody's sitting back going, you know, the Springboks are wounded and they'll come back and look what happened last year, I think the All Blacks are quietly sitting there going, well, we didn't actually play that well and we got home pretty easily. So, you know, if we can just up our game and play more how we want to play, remembering we're at sea level this week, you know, I think the All Blacks go in as favourites.
I think they do go in as favourites. You know, people have said to me it's 50-50, and I've just had John O'Connor on, who's a resident in Hamilton, but he goes on the Rugby Run with Mark Watson, gives his opinion, and he just said that the All Blacks were fantastic and you cannot take it away from them. I feel it's 50-50, but I lean towards the All Blacks in this one, Lee, and the reason is that I think this All Blacks side is a far happier side 2026 compared to last year, 2025. They look like they're enjoying each other, they're each other's company, there's no egos, and it just looks like it's a good team to be involved in.
Yeah, look, I think a couple of things there. One, I don't think we were fantastic. I think we won the key moments. And in any rugby game you can look at, you go back and you say, okay, what were the key moments in the game? Well, obviously that scrum was a key moment. I think a couple of other key moments. One, the Jordan break that led to the McKenzie break, which led to the knock-on, or the knock-back, which was the 5-minute scrum where Luke Jacobson scored. Key moment. The Fabian Holland charge down, we were down 16-13 at that stage, 16-12, and we got up to then lead 19-16. That changed the course of where we were at. So we went from defending and, you know, being under the pump to actually starting to get, okay, well, we're now more than in the game. Key moment. And then obviously that last 10 minutes, you know, a couple of stupid errors from South Africa. What I think you saw there was under pressure, which they haven't been for a long time, they just didn't respond, South Africa, as we've been expecting that they might. Now, what's interesting this week, Amon, is they've brought in Pollard at 10. So they've got arguably the best attacking coach in the world, in Tony Brown, a guy that New Zealand Rugby have signed for 2027 and beyond, not even worrying what happens next year. They're just so convinced he needs to be in the lineup. And they've picked a guy who's in his 30s, who's got no attacking flair really at all, and his main part is just let's go and pump the ball high. So all this kind of crap that you hear from Russie around, you know, the depth, our ability to attack, you know, look at how often we're doing this. The first time he comes under pressure, he goes back to a 35-year-old who's renowned as a great goal kicker. And remember, this is the guy that hit 4 from 4 and cost us the World Cup.
Yeah.
And it basically pumps it in the air. That's not looking forward. That's actually looking back. And so I think he's that desperate to win the game. Now, the other thing to note there, and a lot has been made about George Bauer's performance, but remember, the South Africans swapped their props. So we were under the pump. We swapped ours, so did they. And I think that had an influence on the game. I don't think the scrum will be the big play that it is. And I think one of the things that the All Blacks have got is their ability to absorb pressure. And you saw it, particularly in that second half, we're about 10 minutes in. You know, we started to make post-meter tackle, or meters post-tackle. So in that first half, they were fired up. The crowd was fired up. We were getting smashed. We weren't making post-tackle meters. We were going backwards. However, second half, that changed. Savia, you know, Simon Parker had come on, and Luke Jacobson, and even Big Fabian Holland. We started to make those post meters. So we got hit the tackle, we went through the tackle, we made 2 or 3 meters, and we started to get some momentum. The key to that is it really helps guys like Cam Royga come into the game. It gives Love a bit more space. So all of that kind of happens within the game. So I think we go to Cape Town. You know, I was talking to Fabian on Tuesday, and he said, you just got no clue until you play it how tough it is at altitude. And while they wanted to move the ball, I think the lungs are so screaming that our ability to play 5, 6, 10 phase and more, I just think gets undone by the fact you can't. Well, you can at sea level, and provided conditions are pretty good down there, and there is a bit of rain forecast, but it doesn't look too bad. Provided we can get the ability to move the ball and get guys like Carter and Will Jordan and McKenzie in space, I think we'll look to move them around a lot more than we did at Joburg. And that's why I go into this game thinking we didn't play that well. I agree completely with what you said. And Ruben Love was at pains to point that out, to say, you know, look, I didn't really actually enjoy a lot of my rugby last year. He's clearly now fizzed up. It's a different atmosphere within that camp. I think they go in, and I think they rate themselves, and I wouldn't be surprised if they come out with a similar result.
Absolutely. Well, we move on to some MPC, and I'll be honest with you, this is why I was wishing Miles was here, because he wrote the great promo, you can't be Wellington on a good day. And, of course, then again, if they were playing 8 days out of 7, they'd get beaten. But it's an interesting competition. Of course, Sunday we have a big Shield challenge up in Whangarei. First time since 1979 that the Ramfurly Shield is in that part of the world.
Well, yeah, you can't beat Auckland on a good day either, and they got hammered again. Well, not hammered, but they lost again last night as well.
Yeah, I'm not particularly happy with them, just on the quiet. Yeah. Jared Beer will be getting a call from me at the end of the season. So, yeah.
Oh, look, man, he's a great shark. He's a good Dunedin man. You can't be into Berry. But, look, I think the thing with it is what we've seen, which is why this competition is so amazing, is that in the past, Auckland, Wellington, Canterbury, all dominated. Waikato, yep. They were the big, and then there was probably a level under that, Otago, maybe Hawke's Bay, Bay of Plenty, and then you kind of had your, North Harbour had been sort of cellar dwellers as well, along with Southland and Manawatu. Now, anybody can beat anybody on any given day. You know, like we saw Southland beat Waikato. We've seen, you know, Otago nearly get tipped up by Manawatu. We saw Canterbury lose the Shield to Northland. Auckland have lost. Wellington got 60 put on them last week by Otago. The good news about this, mate, is that all of those Super Rugby players that play, they head back to their home provinces. That's brilliant. You know, in the past, a guy that played for the Highlanders stayed and played for Otago. A guy that played for the Crusaders
played for Canterbury.
Those guys are going back to Tasman and Manawatu, and we see, you know, those players just spread. It's a talent spread. So it's a really even competition. Anybody can get into that, you know, top six, I think. Anybody could win it. There is not a standout. You might go, oh, Canterbury, they got hammered by Northland. Well, where would that happen? They've lost the Shield. You know, Auckland, I don't know, can win a game. Wellington have not only not won a game, they're awful, and look likely to not win a game. You know, Southland and Manawatu look a little bit more competitive. So Hawke's Bay look out the gate good, don't they? Look how good
brilliant.
Are they going?
Fuck, you know,
yes, amazing. Brilliant. And so those players, you know, and that's the great thing about the NPC. And it's a toss-up tonight. There'll be a champion crowd at, up in Whangarei for that game. So, yeah, really good competition. And I think, you know, I've talked about this before. It's the heart of what rugby in New Zealand is. And if I was running the show, which, look, thankfully I'm not, I would actually say to Super Rugby, look, you guys go out to the side, and I would fully privatise that, and I wouldn't have any, I would let them do their own thing. With a link to New Zealand rugby where, you know, they don't have the situation like in English clubs where the clubs are dictating to the union. But I would actually just park all of that up and say, if it was me, I would run an 18-round competition for Super Rugby. I'd have 9 home games and 9 away, and I would run it right through. I wouldn't even worry about it. And I would have the NPC as it is now with fringe Super Rugby players, no All Blacks, and good club players playing in. The All Blacks worry about, New Zealand Rugby worry about the All Blacks, the Black Ferns, and the community game. Super Rugby run Super Rugby, and I think that's a model that would be a lot more sustainable, and I think, okay, you know, that would provide better pathways. Mm.
You said New Zealand Rugby runs a community game. I'm gonna hold my thoughts here, but I would say
I said they should.
They're supposed to, and at times I think they haven't done a very good job, but we move on. Anyway, the Warriors, they have 2 more games, 2 wins. They're likely to be in the top 2. Now, the big debate is they still have to win those two games. The NRL's come in and say, we run the playoffs and we want you to play at Eden Park. I agree with Cam George. Leave it at Go Media. That's their home. That's their base. The only reason the NRL won at Eden Park is because of the money factor. They already make enough. The Warriors are the biggest drawing team in the NRL at the moment. So I think the NRL should really pay the respects to the Warriors and let them play at Go Media.
Yeah, I think a couple of things here. They really only need to win one of the two games, don't they, to finish in the top 2, just given the way that the points differential, I think, between them and the Roosters, it's quite substantial. So I think win one game, and I think they'd probably make the top 2. But look, they've done very well, haven't they, given the injuries that they've got, and particularly in key positions. So hopefully a lot of those guys come back for the playoffs. But I think, to your point, yeah, it's just not the same. You know, it would be like playing at literally 2 different cities. And so while they get a tremendous amount of home support, and they would probably sell it out, to be fair, it's just not the same. It's not the same, you know, it's a bit like your comfy. So when you go home, mate, you can go away for the greatest trip, you know, you can visit the world and you can see some great things, but there's just nothing like home. You walk in your own house and it's just got a comfort about it and you feel good there. That's what the Warriors are. It's like walking into the number one changing room. You feel good about that number one changing room. You've been there before. You know the showers and the facilities and the people, and you know, it just feels good, and you feel good about it. That is not what will happen at Eden Park. While the facilities, you know, good in terms of the changing rooms and the player facilities are way better, and the facilities way better than Go Media Stadium, sure, it's not their natural home, and I think that's what they're saying. But look, they may have no choice there, and the NRL might just override them, because they would get double the crowd. I think you would get what would be the capacity at Go Media, 23 to 25, you get 50 easy at Eden Park.
Absolutely, absolutely. Then, of course, we get to the netball. Well, it is a crisis in our game. I was reading in the staff article this morning. And obviously, the players are likely to stay are Maya Wilson, Phoenix Carica, obviously for obvious reasons, you know. And but there's no competition. They're all heading towards Australia or the United Kingdom, and I don't blame them. They're going to get paid better. They're going to be in a better competition. This is crisis point for New Zealand netball. It's no longer a running joke. The Williams Mowbray thing, is it going to happen? I believe this is all talk at the moment. The thing is happening. I've ran into players. They do not know what's happening. It's uncertainty, and I think it's disrespectful.
Well, look, I think there's a lot to unpack what you said there. I think 18 players are literally confirmed to go overseas. They've named 17, but I think Claire O'Brien potentially will head to the Swifts. So, and that's the start. And what's disappointing, or not disappointing, I think what's alarming in this is there's been the lure of the Super League in Australia. That's been one play. But I think 6 to 7 players have headed to the UK. Now, I have sent a couple of players that way. What they are offering is on a par with what New Zealand, so they're not out the gate better. Their facilities are 20 times better. So they link in with rugby league clubs. You know, you see the Leeds Rhinos or Nottingham Forest in with the Nottingham Forest Football Club. So that the interconnection between their facilities is massive. And it gives young players an opportunity to go overseas, get paid to play, and then, you know, you're in Europe, let me take 6 months and see Europe. So the experience is what a lot of those fringe players are looking for. And the Australian comp, look, that's good for netball in terms of the Silver Ferns. You have got the guts and the core of your best players playing week in, week out against Australia. I think that's a massive tick. So then you come to your home comp. So I think it's past crosses and it's past a joke. And I think some serious questions need to be not only asked, but addressed properly from Netball New Zealand. They've really been silent, and I understand they've got a new CEO coming in, they've got a new board chair coming in, but the Netball public is screaming here. They've got no comp. My understanding is that there won't be an announcement on a comp or player contracting for over a month. So you're looking to October now. So effectively, while that sounds bad, it's not, because the players that are gone have gone. The players that are left are in a pool. There'll be a bit of a scramble for players like you were mentioning that have stuck around for obvious reasons. But you look at a franchise like the Steel, they've lost four of their starting seven. So they've lost Aaliyah Dunn, Georgia Heffernan, they lost Kate Heffernan last year, they've lost Kimmy Poi, and they've lost Karis Scythe. That's the whole team. And on top of that, they brought in Jess Milne from the Firebirds, and they've lost her overseas. I think she's going to the Leeds Runners? Might be going to the Panthers. She's going somewhere. So they've lost all those players. That's your whole team. That's like going to a rugby team and saying, okay, out of your starting 15 lads that you had last year, I'm going to take eight. You know, that's a massive play. So where do they go? Now you're going into development players. Okay, so what happens to that development competition? Where do those players go? Or even do they have a competition? What is the likely makeup of the competition? So we're hearing rumours that they want to do privatisation. We've heard that for a while. What does that actually mean? And if you're an investor, what are you investing in? Because to me, the quality is around the star factors. I'm investing in a team and a product that is going to produce me, or is it going to be good enough that I can commercially make a return? There's no way you're going to get privatisation into a sport where the sports seem to be at a third or fourth tier. Crowds aren't really turning up because the leading players aren't there, or in the Steel's case, because they probably have the biggest and best home crowds in New Zealand. You know, we're probably not going to win it this year. In fact, we're not even really going to be competitive given what we've got in the lineup. So it digs a lot deeper, and we've touched on this a few times, Eamon, over the last a few shows. It digs a lot deeper than what you see on the surface. There's the underpin of who is going to even be in this competition if there is one. Who are the players? Who does young Susie look up to as an 8-year-old or a 12-year-old? Her favourite player is probably playing in an Australian franchise. Does that Australian franchise suddenly become her favourite team? If her favourite player is Grace Nowicki, does she suddenly become a Sirens fan? You know, like, how does that all play out? And so there are all of those nuances within what we're talking about that are serious. And Silver Ferns coach will be rubbing her hands together. Her job's just become a lot easier. But a franchise and a franchise coach and the development pathways, which we talked about with New Zealand Rugby, which are 100% the job of Netball New Zealand and the Zones, has just been blown up and blown in half. And I feel sorry for them all. I think it's a disgrace. I think that the board of the past and the senior management of the past, if there is anybody left in senior management that has not been fired, they should be, because it's a disgrace.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot to unpack for New Zealand netball. We'll just finish it off here, Lee. I'll just talk to you off here.